Hey there, sweet peas. Welcome back to Friendless. I'm your pal, James Avramenko, back once more with a brand new interview. This week, I welcome back to the show lighting designer and inspiration for one of the central characters in my novel, Out of Town, the one, the only, Anton de Groot. Anton is one of my favorite people in the entire world, and we got a chance to unpack what it feels like to become a fictional character, how art impacts interpretations of love, navigating changing careers in your 30s, and so much more. It was so much fun catching up with Anton, and you're gonna love this interview, so buckle up and enjoy Anton de Groot here on Friendless.
Just before we hit record, you were telling me a little bit about your sort of adventures through Europe, and I can't imagine like the impact on the body that that like the travel has like on the brain. You know, I was telling you about my early mornings, but it's like that's nothing compared to like adjusting to like it being a different day.
Absolutely. And I got to make that transatlantic flight twice this summer, which is pretty fun, I guess. Four times, I guess, if you count each direction. The first time it was for a bit of a longer trip, which was great. Just went to Scotland. My partner Meg is doing her PhD at the University of Glasgow. Meg Wilcox, former guest of the Friendless podcast. Yes. So she's been doing her PhD remotely for the last 2 years or so, and has never actually met any of those people in person.
Wow.
So she was going there. So I went along just for about 3-4 days or so. And then she stayed in Glasgow in Scotland. I flew down to Prague in the Czech Republic, where I was attending the Prague Quadrennial of Performance Design and Space, just a giant conference filled with nerds like myself who think they can make a living as theater designers in the world. It's pretty fabulous. It's the third time I've gone. It goes every 4 years. This is the second time that me and a colleague of mine teach our class about devised scenography. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was pretty fantastic. And then Meg met me there. We flew down to the south of France and just bummed around and hid in a tiny middle of nowhere town for like a week and a half.
Like
it was great.
Paradise. Did you find like in which direction did you find your body adapting easier? Was it like going from Canada and then taking up the European clock, or was it leaving Europe and coming back to the Canadian clock?
Definitely going from here out to Europe. 100%. I feel like I was done in like one night. Like I was fully recovered and from jet lag. Just, you know, both times when I arrived in Scotland, I was there for like, I think our flight arrived around 2 o'clock, something like that. Get the baggage, find the hotel, kind of settle in. And then it's just enough time to like surface, take a walk around, have a bite to eat, grab a beer, head back, and then just do your damnedest to stay up as late as you possibly can, which is like 7:30, 8 o'clock. And then sleep all the way straight through and then kind of good to go first thing in the morning. But like I got back a week ago today, and I think last night was my first uninterrupted good night's sleep coming back in this direction. Yeah.
And that's the other thing, isn't it? Is that because you're losing all that time, you have to kind of account for it. I've been putting off a trip to Europe for years. And so anytime I hear anybody went, I have to like fight through those, like, it's almost like those like vagal systems of like, I have to fight through the freeze, and then I have to get through the anger and the jealousy so that I can get into the like connective version of just like, that's incredible, you know? And like,
cool.
And the different spots you saw, to lend a little context to why you were out there, I want to double back just a little bit, just for context for listeners. You know, I know we talked about it in the last interview, but for anyone who like hasn't listened to that episode or who's not familiar with your work, would you mind just giving like a little kind of like who the hell are you kind of intro? That really relates to what took you out to, especially into Prague and Edinburgh.
Oh my gosh, of course. I think so. What I do is I work in the Canadian theater as a designer and a scenographer. So that means I focus on set design, lighting design, and sound design are my three elements that I do that. And I kind of work contract to contract, whomever is interested in bringing me along for a job or interested in my vision or I'm interested in theirs. And that's really what I do. And then around that as well, I do a fair amount of teaching. I teach a class at the University of Calgary, doing that kind of work, do some work with younger students, high school students, kind of around other theatrical works. Yeah. And so that's what I've been doing that for 20 years. I had a small sabbatical around the pandemic when literally everyone in my business was having a bit of a sabbatical when all of show business shut down. But whereas I worked as an architectural lighting consultant, I think I had just started that gig, honestly, when we chatted last time. But that's I've been out of that for 2 years now. So that, right. I think.
What pulled you away from that? What pulled you away from the sort of like the corporate world and pulled you back into the arts?
It was a combination of things. First and foremost, I really did very much enjoy the work that I was doing. I found it quite creative. However, the particular company that I was working with, I found them to be less amenable to how I kind of like to live my life in the world. And I don't mean like, I guess I don't mean like they were resentful of me wanting to come in late. That's not what I mean. What I mean is that I found there was a real disconnect in terms of values, just for myself and for them. Definitely that particular company, you know, prolific, hardworking group of people, but definitely run by 80s guys. And, you know, myself, I just found it was harder pushing up against that. And if I wanted to, I felt that if I wanted to succeed in that particular business, working for that particular company, that I was going to really have to start to look at where my values lie and start to put those aside and start to like, oh, actually, it's okay if I, you know, stomp on, you know, the careers of my female colleagues. Okay. You know, like that's a lot of my female colleagues were leaving because they felt they couldn't get ahead. And me seeing that and among other, you know, very narrow-minded conservative, lowercase c conservative values and mindsets, it just, I didn't want to be party to that. And so that was kind of the big thing. But also like, I wanted to go back to work where all my friends are. And where I'm good at something, right? Like starting another career when you're in your late 30s was like scary. Surprisingly difficult and a bit scary. And like, I was able to speak the language of design to many of the colleagues that I work with, but there were so many little gaps in the knowledge, like the process of how construction works and these things that everyone else around me all knew, but they didn't know how to communicate it. So I was often always catching up and I was always felt like I didn't know what I was talking about and so much energy. So it was nice to be going to a place, back to a place where I'm an expert. I don't have to be the expert in the room, but being an expert amongst other experts is extremely fulfilling. And just I feel like I can actually contribute and do something of value.
Well, and that's such an interesting, you know, that feeling of like an expert versus the expert. Like, it's like, I feel like I understand that so deeply in that it's like, you want to be around like-minded people. And, you know, hearing you talk about like, you know, yeah, the work's good, but I'm spending my days with people I don't want to be spending my days with. Like, that's one of the easiest, quickest soul crushers, right? And I think, you know, myself included, I've been in situations where it's I've justified staying in situations because of the core work, but the team around me is not doing it. You know, it's not doing it for me, right? And that is definitely one of those like magical lures of theater, isn't it? Of the like, there's this built-in like buddy system, right? And you know, for some people, you know, for myself, it's like that. I think that kind of burned me in the end. But it's also like it is such a comfort if you find the right team and the right community for it, right?
I totally agree, 100%. And I find it interesting just how lucky I think that I have been. In my life, like just in terms of like you know, I acknowledge all sorts of, you know, privileges in how I get ahead in the world, you know, in coming up in the aughts and the 2010s and all that. So, however, and what's interesting is, like, in a way, my values were never super, super challenged in that way. Like, generally, 8 times out of 10, I saw eye to eye with almost everybody that I was working with. Certain outliers, of course, you know, many of which who have left the business by their own choice or not in the past couple of years, certainly. But it was so interesting to be confronted in a place with people whose values were completely different from my own. Not completely, but politically and socially in a lot of ways. And just how, you know, like, they were good people for sure. They weren't, you know, if you call them out, you know, they would staunchly defend themselves as being good people. But at the same time, just like seeing sort of these ingrained ways of working was fascinating, just fascinating. And it's like, it is changing even in that business, I think. And, you know, I don't know, who knows how long that company will be around, there are a lot of evolved minds there, but just, that's not where I was working at that time. So some great people.
Thing, I feel like I'm hearing something about sort of like that iterative change, right? And how it's like, you know, I think something I've encountered in the past and continue to encounter is this frustration of, like, when you see something's broken in a system, you want to change it, and you want it all to change right away, because you're like, well, why would you keep going? This is fucked, you know? And the frustration is that, like, you can't, because it's a machine and machines don't change that way, you know? Like, if you want the machine to keep running, you can only replace one piece and one part at a time. Like, you can't just dismantle it. Otherwise, you now have a new machine, right? And it's like, so you kind of have to iterate, you know? It's that, what is it? Is it? It's Odysseus's ship, you know, and every plank gets replaced until the point where it's like, is it the original ship anymore? And that's sort of the goal. But, you know, that metaphor is about it being over time, right? And you have to sort of decide for yourself, like, is it worth me sticking around and helping replace each part? Or is it better for me to just jump ship and find a whole new part?
Absolutely. And I thought a bit about it, and I thought, you know, like, I could have been an agent of change in that world, but the energy that it was going to take for me.
Well, not
was
every
gonna,
fight is your fight.
Exactly. And I wish that it could have been, right? Like, but it just, I just felt like at all points, it was going to be a fight constantly. And I knew that it was going to ruffle some people's feathers. And I just didn't care enough about that particular group of people, right? Like, why worry about that, right? Like, I can make social change in other ways. I can commit my energy to, you know, like, similar causes, but in different outputs. Like, I remember actually at one point before I left, they invited me to join the Equity, Diversity, Inclusion Committee. And I was like, oh yeah, okay, who else is on it? And it's just like, white guy, white guy, white guy, white guy, white guy. And I said, thank you for the invitation. Absolutely not. And here's why. And until you start, like, until this committee starts to actually, like, look a bit more like the people you are supposedly trying to prop up with your mandate, like,
maybe
I'm not
equitable
interested.
And inclusive. You know?
Exactly. It was so weird. It was so funny.
I love it. You know, that kind of leads me into the first sort of big question that I've been introducing in this new round of interviews. And it's this, you know, in our last chat, we talked about, you know, being a friend, right? And what it means to be a friend. And I've been kind of expanding that concept into, well, a friend is somebody who's a member of a community, you know, and so, okay, then what the fuck is a community, you know? Because that's a term I'm seeing a lot, you know, being in community, being a member of this, that, the other thing, you know? And I'm curious to know what, I guess at the baseline to you, what what does a community mean? And then we can kind of roll from there.
Sure. That is such a great question. And I've been thinking a little bit about it since you mentioned it the other day. And I've as of yet so far not been able to come up with a succinct answer. So I'm happy that you and I can kind of jam this out a little bit because I'm kind of curious myself.
Literally, that's the point of a podcast is to riff.
Exactly. Like, it's funny because that word does get bandied around a fair amount, you know, in our business, of course. Like, I hear about the quote unquote theater community or the film community or the dance community, right? Like, that's fantastic. You know, and I feel very much a part of the theater community here in town. But also, you know, the community that I live in is my neighborhood in Bankview here in Calgary. There's a community association. There's, you know, my neighbors, the people that live on my street. There's, it's in a way, it's these very disparate definitions about what it might mean, but it's like the one thing that actually has in common is that there's more than one person.
Yes.
And that's kind accurate. Of the only thing I've been able to kind of like put my finger on here is like, mm-hmm. it's more than one person engaging with something, and that mm-hmm. something can be each other. That something can be a common cause or a common interest, can be a, you know, common work, can be a common space in terms of like neighborhood. So it just, it's that. So I think that's where I've come to land. Now, feel almost in a way the harder part is like, what does that mean to me? And I'm not 100% sure at this time, because our world has become so fractured in the last 2 years. And like, I still work in the theater community here. I still create work. I still am grateful for my friends and colleagues. But yet I also feel more distant from it than I ever have. And I'm not sure if that's just because of the pandemic. Is that, you know, because we all took, you know, 2 years off to try and, you know, survive. Maybe not. And also recognizing that even within that singular community, that there is myriad other communities, and that not all, you know, especially in like these arts or fields, certain community members are not treated as equitably as others, mm-hmm. and that comes from all sorts of systemic reasons, potentially, all these other things. So even within that larger community, people aren't community. Let me say this again: community members within the community that I feel like I am a part of don't necessarily see themselves as an equal member, and that kind of breaks my heart a little bit.
Well, and that's, so this is a kind of the core of, I think, the spirit behind the question is this idea of like, you know, I feel at conflict with the concept of community, because there's this part of me that feels like, well, in one direction, we're all a community because we're just humans, you know, and like humans are in community together because that's sort of the nature of what humans are. And it just so happens that the biology of our brain means we can only really hold like a couple hundred connections at a time. And then everyone else just becomes a stranger to us. So that feels like a threat. But then in the other direction, it's like, maybe that's what we should be leaning into. And maybe we're actually pushing too hard for big communities, and maybe we actually should be a little bit more closed down, and we should be a little bit more unit based, you know, like maybe that would be healthier for us. I mean, you know, in a lot of directions, you think like, if we were less concerned about the global community, we would have less need for, you know, transcontinental transport and trade and, you know, goods and services and things. And we would be more concerned with like, well, what do we have in front of us right now for the unit, you know? And so, you know, you think about all the genuinely earth threatening issues that are coming to a head. I mean, as we record this, you know, half of BC is on fire right now, you know? And it's like, you know, if we were to be a little more insular and a little more closed down and maybe a little more exclusive in our communities. Like, you know, who knows how we would actually define those parameters, and I'm sure somebody would fuck it up, but like, you know, but it's like that may kind of lead us to being a little bit more eco forward, you know? So I feel such a conflict with these two directions of what I feel like I would like in a community or in my participation in community, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I that's an interesting perspective I had honestly not considered. And it's so interesting to balance that between also like the human urge for curiosity, right?
And exactly. Like
wanting to explore beyond what is just immediately in front of us, because what can also happen in that, you know, the dangerous thing about that is then the sense of other becomes much more tangible, right? And
yes,
you know, and the greatest strength, I do feel the greatest strength that our species has in common is that when we band together, we can kind of do anything if we actually care mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah.
I worry a little bit about if, like, is actually, let me reframe that. I'm curious more about if there's a way to both like narrow and open at the same time, right? Like,
yes,
you know what I mean? In terms of what you're saying and like bringing that space in and seeing what's immediately there, it like, it brings the scale down so much. It becomes like those global problems, these massive catastrophes that are happening, you know, me riding my bike to work tomorrow or whatever isn't going to fix it all, right? But
exactly.
But it that actually might make an impact on the immediate group right in front of my eyes at the same time. But then not engaging with the broader world can be kind of scary, because then we can just be like, check, we're done. But we're not actually done. We have so much more to do.
Well, yeah. And that's just it. And it's like, I feel this conflict about that, because there's this part of me that's like, you know, there's so much like psychic agony created by knowing what's going on in the world. You know, like I read, you know, I found this new news app called Roka News. It started as an Instagram account, and then they've got their own app now. And, you know, they do just a couple stories a day and then you're done with the app. And they just, it's not a continuous feed. It's just like, it's curated. It's purposely written very, not centrist, but it's purposely not written with a slant. It's just fact-based with no opinion attached.
Right.
Because it's, you know, the argument is like the news is supposed to just tell you the news. It's not supposed to tell you how to feel about the news, right? And there's this half of me that's like fascinated, and like I'm on a little streak with it. They've totally gamified it, so it's like I'm on a 40-day streak, and you know, and yada yada yada. But at the same time too, it's like, how much good is it actually doing to my day to know about, like, you know, Venezuelan politicians being assassinated, or like, you know, a coup happening in Niger or something like that. You know, like I value that knowledge and that curiosity. And that does spark a thought. I want to talk about it in a sec, but it's like, at the same time too, my knowing that doesn't actually improve my day, which is what kind of has to be at the core of self love and self-health, is like making sure that your needs are center. You know, it's like, it's healthy ego, right? It's like, it's like, if I'm going to be able to do anything good, let alone good for the world, whatever that means, like I have to first do good for myself, you know? And I think that there's so much like there's this like pressure to know stuff, because if you don't know it, then you're part of the problem, man, you know? And it's like, well, no, I just have fucking bills to pay. Like, are you gonna, you know, like, I saw this fantastic post the other day that's sort of tangential, but I feel like related spiritually, is that former guest of the show, Lauren Malisi, you know, she posted this, this Ask Me Anything thing, and somebody posted like, I always worry about girls, of course they said girls, who have an OnlyFans account. And I'm worried that they're whatever. Da, da, da. And she, her reply was beautiful because it was like, okay, well, if you're worried about me, then how about you pay my student loan? And how about you pay for my moving fees? And how about you pay for the, you know, the things that I'm funding with this OnlyFans? Like, if you're worried about me, why aren't you helping? Right. And I just like, I think I hit a point where it's like, I can only worry about stuff and I can't help stuff. You know, I don't know how to help Venezuela. I don't know how to help other countries. I don't even know how to help myself. So why would I waste what limited capacity I have on this sort of like knowledge Olympics with strangers on the internet, you know?
Right. Oh my gosh. That's a whole other doing that with strangers. Like I dip into the comment section. I've never commented once. Please don't mistake when I say that, but like,
but I read
just
them.
I read them just to, occasionally just to see what sort of like true unhinged perspectives are like flowing out of these things. And just, it reminds me. So, I'm not sure what it totally reminds me, but it, I don't know. It's a pleasurable experience every once in a while, just to kind of like dip into that and dip back out and see. So I have no interest in engaging that. Oh yeah. There's a lot. Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of judgment, a lot of wild accusations of terrible, terrible things. Yeah.
That's one thing. It's that it's like, why would I engage in a discourse that jumps that quickly to just saying, go die. You know, it's like, well, that's not helping anybody. Like there's no point in telling anybody go kill yourself because like, that's a useless argument for whatever part of the spectrum you fall on, you know, like it's what a bad answer, you know, but you said something before that I wanted to loop back to about the sort of inherent nature of curiosity in, you know, humans. And I've been thinking a lot about this recently because it's like, you know, we do have this intrinsic curiosity within ourselves. And you know, as you learn history and you go back through like, you know, great explorers, the tragedy of every explorer is that they inevitably, as you say, they encounter unknowns, people, and then because they're strangers, their first impulse is protection. And so it leads to violence. Right. And it's, you know, I got really hyperfixated on Alexander the Great a couple months ago. Read like four books about him and just became fascinated by him because he really became this figure to me of like, he's like a very tragic figure to me because he you know, he obviously had deep-seated like parent issues and was just had like an inferiority complex. And all he really seemed to want to do was be an explorer. It's just that the nature of the era he lived in was that he had to be a warlord, you know? And so it's like, I feel like if he'd lived centuries later, he would have just been a cartographer or some shit, you know?
Right.
But then on the flip side, like his conquests ended up opening up, you know, new known worlds, right? So it's this really hard, you know, I'm not arguing for colonialism. It's just this really difficult, like it's this really difficult balance of like, there is good that comes out of exploration. It's just that there is also so much pain, you know? And I don't know how to reconcile that kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel like those are such two separate things, but they come together so much. Curiosity and exploration is so, it's so lovely. Like it's so, the idea of it in and of itself is grand. It's the thing that stories are written about, you know, like, yeah, like, I don't know. I've watched Star
Every
Trek
story
as a kid.
Is a question.
Like,
Yeah,
it's like it's about those, you know, exploring and seeing what's out there, but then bringing that all that baggage along and that other side of the coin of take, right? And consume, and yeah, it's a balanced thing that is scary, and yeah, and I don't know how we can change that, if we can, or, you know, what's next for us too, right? Like I remember hearing something interesting not long ago about kind of the people of our, like, not just our generation, but our like broader generations. How did they say it? It was like, we're too old to explore the planet, but too young to explore the stars in a way. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting because, you know, there's certainly so much to discover about our own world, certainly without a doubt. But, you know, and then the premise is that of that comment was that, of course, we will become a spacefaring race one day, sure, which we may or not, certainly. But I just thought, I don't know, I thought it was an interesting thing. And what is it about that not having something to explore readily? What does that do to like the psyche of a people, I guess?
Yeah.
And, you know, also with the premise, hopefully, that that exploration is not colonialist and destructive.
Well, and that's just it, isn't it? You know, I'm reading about like there's different countries who are trying to like get back to the moon because they want to set up colonies there, and it's like Russia just like fucked up their landing. They did the first attempt at a landing since the 70s and they fucked it up, and so now I believe it's Pakistan has a thing going up, and it's supposed to launch like this week, and but it's all with these intentions of these like unilateral colonies. Like it's not with actual exploration or discovery in mind. It's ways to like secure territory, you know? And
yeah,
and that's the same thing. That's why I have no faith in someone like Elon Musk and his like dumbass fucking Mars probes and shit, because it's like, no, you're like, until you fundamentally change yourself as a human, there's no way that you won't take that with you wherever you go. And so like that is a deeply broken man, a deeply unhealthy man who, no matter what planet he lives on, will just be a deeply unhealthy man, you know? And yes. And so it's like, I don't want fucking Elon Musk on Mars. Leave Mars alone, you know? Like, fuck off, man, you know?
Yes. Mars currently has considerably fewer assholes on it than Earth does. And
literally, right? They're doing fine without us, you know? Exactly. Like, fuck, you know? And it's like, why would we want to go to Mars when we're fucking up this planet? Like, what are we going to do? We're just going to fuck it up too. So like, why don't we stop worrying about sending rockets out and start going interior, you know, and like fix ourselves, right? But
yes.
I don't know. But that's scary, right? That's a scary, like, you know, right?
I was talking
the other day, you know, you were mentioning this idea of like this like toxic masculine culture and mm-hmm. you know, how destructive that is, not only for the people around them but themselves, and it's like it's a really hard thing to communicate to somebody who's in pain and doesn't even know it, right? Like they've been bearing that pain for so long they don't even realize how broken they are, you know?
Right.
They think that that's just normal, right?
Right.
And it's like, how would you even approach something like that, you know?
I have no idea. I truly have no idea. I guess living is an alternate example is the only thing I can think of. And again, maybe that kind of comes back to what you'd mentioned about just like narrowing that focus a little bit, right? But if I can do that for myself and, you know, try to be a better person in that regard, then maybe it'll rub off on someone and maybe it won't.
Yeah.
But I guess that's okay.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
I have a question for you. What? Two questions. They're very different, different topics, I suppose.
Love it.
But I think I'm kind of curious a bit about what it is that in the years you have been doing this show, like, I remember way back when, like way back when, like lifetimes for us ago, back when, I think you and I sat down, like we'd known each other a bit, but we weren't like super close pals. I think this was the beginning of us becoming pretty good pals. Was we went to, I think it was to Last Best, like pub here in town. And I remember you were just being like, I want to start a podcast. And this is what I think I want us to be, want it to be about. And like, this was so long ago. And now, you know, you've done that. You've moved cities. I think your understanding of who you as a human being has evolved. Your life has changed in countless ways. And yet this show, even the different iterations of it has been a consistency throughout all of those ups and downs that I know you've had and that you know I've had too. So kind of keeping like with that show in mind as kind of this consistent point, what is it? What have you learned about people through the lens of that show, through your life over the past 6 or 7 years, however long it is that you've been doing it? Yeah. And how has it changed, you know, for the better, for the ill, or not at all? That's my question.
I love that. You know, I think the first impulse thought for me is that I have discovered that there's just so much more love in my life than I ever give myself credit for, you know, that I can very easily slip into self-loathing and apathy and all those fun, you know, feelings. And by continually forcing myself to connect with people who I may be afraid to connect with, or I may be nervous to, or I may be uncertain what we'll talk about, or all those, you know, and then we end up having this great time, you know, and I just feel loved, you know, and so I think, yeah, I think the core has just been rediscovering that there is sort of, there's a bottomless well for love at all times, anywhere. You do have to go looking for it, you know. It won't always come to you. And I think oftentimes in my life, I have fallen into the sort of like a little bit of a victim mentality of like, I'm hurting, but I'm going to close off and just wait for someone to notice that I'm not around, you know? And that's not really fair. Like, that's kind of manipulative. And so, you know, sometimes I'm incapable of reaching out, but then there are times when I can. And I think that this podcast has really helped me learn how to reach out and how to take a little bit of ownership from my side, you know? I'm not responsible for other people's behaviors, but I am responsible for my own, you know? And so if I'm lonely and people aren't reaching out, you know, I can ask myself, have I been reaching out, you know? And I bear just as much responsibility in that transaction, you know? Right. I think that's one of the core ones. The other thing is that it's like, it has become a real comfort to me knowing that, like, even when I'm stressed and even when I go on hiatus and I take a breather, I know that it's always there, because it's just for, it's in essence, it is just for me. Like, I don't do it for, you know, to become, you know, some big podcast person. Like, I don't do it for accolades or acclaim. I do it because, like, it's really nice for me to get a chance to talk to somebody I've wanted to talk to, you know, and spend an hour chatting and hearing their stories and hearing their opinions on stuff and being heard too. Right. You know, like it's just as reciprocal in the other way. So that's been what always brings me back, is being like, well, this isn't, you know, success to me is like, did the guest have fun? And in which case, right, cool. Whoever listens to it, like, have fun, you know what I mean? Like, it like that kind of stuff doesn't really matter to me. Metrics and SEO and optimizing and yada yada yada, like, I do, you know, who gives a shit, right? Like, as long as I had a nice time with my guest, then the episode is a success to me, you know. And that really keeps me coming back, you know. And that really you know, both those things have really painted, like, I think I'm not alone in the struggle to find connection and in the struggle to maintain connection. And I think people are really fucking lonely these days. And I think a lot of people don't even necessarily realize how lonely they are until they're asked, how are you feeling? You know, and then they have to stop and go, oh shit, I've been like ignoring these really deep feelings for a long time. And I really love the opportunity to give that space to hear that, you know? I mean, it's funny that links to like, to me, what community is like, it's not about, it's not transactions. It's reciprocity, right? You know, it's like, it's like what I have the capacity for is what I can offer.
Right.
And then we build that together, you know?
Right.
And I guess my capacity is like, yeah, I can offer you an hour chat every once in a while, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know, speaking of like sort of community stuff, this is something I've been wanting to talk to you for a bit. So longtime listeners of the show will be familiar with, for a little while, I was doing little filler episodes where I was reading out chapters of a novel that I had written last year. It's since stalled out and I'm reappraising what I'm even doing with the whole thing. But it was, at times loosely and at times very concretely inspired by a trip that I took 2 years ago where I stayed at your house, and you in the writing were used as the template for a character, which I was so nervous about, because, you know, as we were talking about before recording, you know, I never wrote with any malicious intent, but, you know, after writing it and putting it out and running out of time before sort of asking you about it, I realized like, intention doesn't mean anything to impact, you know? And so I could have written it with all the love of my heart, and you could have still seen something that rubbed you wrong, and that would be completely valid, and I would have hurt you in that case, you know? And I should and would take accountability for that, you know? And I guess I'm really curious, like, how did it feel initially to sort of like, yeah, be sort of templated into this kind of like pseudo caricature, you know?
It was super interesting. I listened to that while I was in the south of France. I was kind of just walking around, so just had that for having this like interesting call back to home while I was in a very completely different environment. So yeah. It was interesting, and like I recognize it, I think, on your the show's Instagram feed, mentioning something about what does this protagonist learn about blind cats or something. I'm like, okay, I have a feeling I know what this is going to be about. And it just like how, you know, just how similar it was. And like, I think it was chapter 8, and I don't think I've heard chapter 9. I don't think that's even come out yet.
No, that was like, the last chapter
so,
I put out.
Yeah. So I'm kind of like, I need closure on this anecdote. How will this shake out? But like, it was intriguing to me just to hear that, just how close to home it really was, and just how kind of, you know, spot on. I think the only, you know, factual inaccuracy is that that character may not have another beer with you, but I certainly will.
What's funny is the next chapter is like, so we end up finishing the box of beers.
And, yes, you know? Of course. I'm sure it would. That's really funny. But yeah, like, I think my feathers were never rankled. I was never concerned about that. I trust you as a human and as a friend and as a writer and artist to like be sensitive to whatever, and you know, that whole thing, there was nothing to be sensitive about, really.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that I found interesting, and this is actually, I mentioned that I had two questions. This was the second question.
Oh, beautiful.
It was directly related to this. Was, I think, if I'm right, the question that the chapter title was something around the lines of like, does Brett actually like me, or does he just pretend to care because I'm not, or he's nice, or something yes. around that, right?
Yeah.
I genuinely wondered if that, if you thought that, and you may and you may not, and I'm a nice guy. I can definitively answer that, you know, that certainly I do care about you, regardless of nice guy or not. But yeah, like I was surprised that that was a question. And I hoped that you would know that you could always call, like genuinely, like you were and I really mean that. And I'm, you know, I would say this on mic or off mic but I don't know what's going on in your writer's mind in that. I don't know if that's like a literary device for you. That's entirely fine. So I guess I hoped that in every interaction that we've had since you moved out of Calgary is that I genuinely do care for you as a friend. And I truly do, regardless of any, you know, of any time that's separated and anything like that. So I think that was the only thing that came to my mind I hope he knows for real that's true. And even if he doesn't, that I want to make sure that he does.
Thank you. Thanks, Anton. That's like genuinely really sweet. That actually hit me really hard.
No, of course.
It's funny because it's like, I do know that, you know, and I think it was, it was two things. One was like, you know, the narrator at the time in the book is in a very different emotional state than I am, you know? And so definitely it's a part of that. It's trying to really lean into the anxiety, and it's leaning into the dysregulation, and it's leaning into that uncertainty, right? And at the same time too, I mean, those are genuine questions I have asked myself, not just about you, but about everyone, you know.
I recently
reshared a little, I think it was a TikTok or an Instagram thing I saw that was like this guy being like, this is my impersonation of someone I think hates me. And then it's like, hi, how are you? Oh my God, I've missed you. Oh, I was just at a party. I just had my birthday. You were invited, but you didn't come. And everyone was asking where you were. And are you free right now? Would you like to go for a beer? I just want to talk, right? You know, and it's just like, and it just felt so real. And it felt so like, you know, because I am somebody, I mean, look, you know, one of the sort of spirits of the show is that like through much of my life, I have struggled to maintain friendships, and I have been burned so many times, you know? And so it's like, I know how volatile I can be, and I know how volatile I have been. And that's really led me to like a deep distrust of myself that I continue to process through. And that does leave me often questioning authenticity in everything, you know, you know, derealization, you know, it's real, you know, and so like I have asked myself that. And then at the same time too, I do know, like, especially by you, with using, you know, using you as the example, I do know that that is genuine, and there is an actual love here, there is an actual friendship here. But like, thank you so much for saying it. That really is so kind-hearted and like so sweet. And it's like, it's always nice to hear that you care about someone, or that you're cared about, you know.
No, of course. And I also recognize that like me asking this question is coming from, you know, something that a work of semi-autobiographical, semi-fictional work, you know, of a small snippet of which I've heard, you know, heard a tiny bit that I've not seen the rest, right? So like, I also understand, you know, I make art myself, so I understand that there are always other contexts. So and like, and it had nothing to do with you at all. I was like, you know, I have my own anxieties and my own anxiousnesses.
Sure.
And often that is comes around, you know, perception of, you know, how do people perceive who I am and how I go day to day, you know, especially, you know, as a person who is like myself, I'm very like conflict averse and very, I often feel, even about causes that I feel very passionate about, I often feel too dumb to engage with it. And so I I will more often than not choose the way of least resistance, which isn't always great, but because of that, I'm often curious what people see and what people recognize, and if I'm being understood. That's something I always struggle with sometimes. Yes. Is like, am I making myself understood? So mm-hmm. when a question like that comes up about a fictional character in a totally different other work of art that reminds me of myself, it makes me ask those questions, right? And like, is there a ways for myself to be a better friend? You know, is the way that I'm, you know, when I leave interactions, do people feel, you know, safe? Do they feel seen? Do they feel understood as well? So it makes my head spin sometimes. Yeah. That's all. And I think, that's what good pieces are all about.
But at the same time too, like, thank you so much for sharing that. I genuinely, you know, because it's like, yeah, it's so interesting, like, hearing your side on that, because it's like, I wrote it from my perspective, right? And then thinking through the it is a narrator, so like, there is a division, but at the same time too, I am the writer, and like, so every character is me, you know, like, it's both, you know, and like I say, it is a question I have personally asked, but I don't think I had reconciled the other side of it, of like, what would that make someone feel being asked that, you know, like, cause to me it was more an internal question of like, well, I'm unlikable. Right. And I hadn't considered the thought of like, well, is that making someone else feel like they're not showing their love, or, you know, like, and that question of being understood hits so hard, of like, you know, I know I struggle with all the time. It's why I'm constantly repeating myself, because I'm like, let me try that with like a slight tweak and just waste more time, right? You know?
Yeah, exactly. I do the same thing.
But you are absolutely, you know, I want to just say clearly and bluntly, you are seen and you are loved, and I feel loved by you. And I appreciate you so much. And I wonder sometimes about not about if we're friends or not, but it's like, I, you're somebody I wish I was better at consistency with. I talk often on the show about being really inconsistent about anything that's not right in front of me, you know, like I don't, you know, I'm autistic and ADHD. So like, I just have no object permanence, you know? And so like, it's only when I get these flashes of reminders that I go, fuck, Anton, shit, I haven't talked to him in 2 months, fuck, you know, and then, right? but there's no, like, love lost in my heart on my side, and there's no, like, hard feelings, you know? It's just, like, if my heart goes in any, you know, quote-unquote negative direction, it's purely, like, I did something wrong, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Which is, like, not a great, you know... We don't need to go in either of those directions. Nobody's done anything negative. We've just been living, right?
Exactly. And I also think that there's value in friendships with people where you may not see them all the time, and that there's the ability to kind of almost pick up exactly where you left off, right?
Like, exactly.
I don't remember the last time that you and I spoke, but, you know, beyond like over a handful of text messages, right? Like, and yet there's a comfort and a shared history for us to just almost pick up pretty much exactly where we left off. And I think that's totally fine. You live in Vancouver. I don't live in Vancouver, right? Like, that's okay. And that's going to be fine. And like, I'd love for us to hang out more, but the world's, a bigger place, and that's okay. Yep. And that's, but knowing that we can kind of like come back to this moment, really whenever is, and that's something I trust, is like, you know, I don't know when we'll chat again, honestly, I don't know. And, if you do that trip to Calgary, like, drop me a line, let's hang out.
Yes.
But I know that next interaction is going to be as pleasant and fun as this.
That's exactly right.
And it doesn't matter if it's in a year, it doesn't matter if it's tomorrow, right? And there are values to those different types of friendships than the folks that you see literally every single day.
Yep, There's you know, you're speaking to something that I've been working on with my therapist a lot, and I've spoken about it a little bit in past recent episodes about dismantling like black and white thinking and instead leaning into the curiosity. And you just said it so beautifully about like, you know, it's not that I'll never see you. It's not that I'll always see you. It's that I might see you sometime, and like leaving those doors open rather than like, you know, because if you close the door, then it's done, right? And then you're telling yourself I'm in control of that because it's a closed door or whatever it is. But by leaving it ajar, you know, you're leaving it to just whatever life brings, you know. And and it's funny because, like, you know, with you, it's like, you know, we've tried a few times. We've tried you know, like there was trips supposed to be planned and stuff's fallen through and all kinds of random stuff, right? You know, and life just happens, right? And
totally.
And you know, I think this is such a beautiful, like, for lack of a better word, like, case study of like staying open and staying curious and just, you know, recognizing that, like, you know, you can hold love for someone and also let them live, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, I hope that, you know, us bringing this up is like, just because you never considered from my point of view in that writing, I hope that won't stifle your thoughts moving forward.
Oh, no. No, no. Well, I mean, that book's already written. So whatever's in there, that's already in there.
Oh, whatever. Right? Yeah.
but like next whatever projects, like it's really, you're really helping open my eyes to, like, there's not just the internal answer to the question. There's also the external answer to the question. And like neither has to overpower the other, but they should be considered, you know? And I really love that. I really value that.
Thank you.
So I'm cognizant of the time. I think I want to just jump into kind of the wrappy uppy question.
Sure.
And we've kind of been touching on it, and that, so, you know, I don't want to say I know what your answer will be, but I feel like I've already heard some really good suggestions. But, you know, as I love to do, I like to leave listeners with sort of an actionable thing they can try out this week. And so what do you think is something that they could try doing to be a better friend this week?
Oh, what a lovely question. I think what they should do is take a minute and scroll through your phone and find someone you haven't texted in a little while. I feel like this advice has been given on your show previously. And in fact, I can think of at least two people off the top of my head. I'm a listener, not just a guest.
Every day, you know?
Yeah. But just, but like, yeah, scroll through that phone, pick someone you haven't seen for a little while and just say, hey, hope you're good. You know, don't maybe phrase it in a way that where that can be a kind of a closed interaction, that you're not putting them on the spot to get back to you. If they do, they will. That's lovely, and that'll start something. And if they don't, that's totally cool too. It could be that they got your text in the car and were like, I'll deal with that later. And then 6 weeks later, they message you back. I do that all the time.
Same, literally, same.
Yeah. So I think that's something that could be simple. You know, and we do have, despite the technology that keeps us apart, it also keeps us connected. And I think, and I would suggest a text message over a call, which is rife with all sorts of like societal anxiety. Sure. Or for me, I'll speak for myself. But that text message can probably go a long way. And just to say, oh, hey, how's it going? And just drop that. And
I love it.
Yeah, I think that's I'm going to try to do that too.
Yeah. That's the thing. I feel really charged up by, you know, because like, yeah, once again, coming back to like that, I feel like that happens to us all the time. Somehow we have like a sixth sense for texting each other at like what's a great time for me at a terrible time for you, or vice versa, you know, and it'll happen to me all the time. I'll get a text from you and I'll be like, fuck yeah. And I'll put my phone away because I can't text at the moment. And then, yeah, a month will go by and I'll go, oh, fuck, you know?
Right? Oh, yeah. You know? I do it all the time. It's terrible.
I love it. So What do you have coming up? Do you have anything you want to plug? Do you have anywhere you would like listeners to find you, follow any of your work or anything like that?
What have I got to plug? Oh, gosh. You know what? I'm not going to plug myself. Can I make some like podcast recommendations instead?
Fuck yeah, you can.
Okay, cool. Yeah, like my stuff is fine, but I've been really listening to a lot of podcasts lately, and that makes me excited. The one show I will suggest that people, if they want a great little escape from reality, but is also like a is like a really well thought through and well reported show. There's a podcast called Imaginary Worlds that's out there. It's hosted by a guy named Eric Malinsky. He's a former This American Life producer and reporter, and he's kind of done this podcast and he's made a business out of it. It's their tagline is Imaginary Worlds, why we create them and why we want to suspend our disbelief or something like that. So it's like looking at society and culture through the lens of like science fiction, fantasy stories.
I'm already sold. I love
it. It's lovely. It's really lovely. And if you download, I think what is their most recent episode? I don't know when you're releasing this, but at least one of the episodes that came out in the summer. It's about television shows that were canceled too soon. And he did a listener call out. And I got to go on and speak very eloquently about one of my favorite canceled shows, Carnival. So wow. I'm going to recommend that. Yeah.
Amazing. Carnival, yeah. There was a show. Holy shit. Oh, season so one good. Was incredible. I don't think, I think I might have actually not finished season two because I knew it got canned. And so I was too disappointed, you know, but I'm going to look out for that episode. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be out now. I think it just came out very recently. It's a 2-part episodes. One is about like special gems of shows that people may not have heard of that is quite good. But the first half is that. So you'll hear me speak eloquently about that. His editing was very, very good. I'll also recommend another podcast called Bellwether. It was an independent show that came out. I don't know. It came out a while ago, 2 years ago or so. It's written, produced by a journalist I really respect named Sam Greenspan. They used to be one of the founding producers for 99% Invisible. If you've ever heard that, like big time stuff. So when I was in Prague, I follow Sam on Instagram. So, and I saw that they and their partner Shing were in Prague just randomly. And Sam and I had a interaction years and years ago about something else. So I kind of just like, I reached out randomly. I was like, hey, are you in Prague for the quadrennial? And they're like, yeah, want to go hang out? I'm like, yes, I do.
Fuck yes.
Sam and Shing and Meg and I went out for dinner. We went to see a show and just hung out and just talked about podcasting and about the world. And Sam's in an interesting, like, career transition right now and like trying to figure out what they want to do next, and Shing is just like, she's just this amazing, interesting puppeteer builder and fascinating artist, and it was just fabulous. And so anyway, Sam made this amazing show called Bellwether. I think it's a 6 or 8 part series they call speculative journalism, and it's kind of got a like a science fiction frame and then reporting real stories and then and then this fictional narrative that's also happening within that that's supporting it. I think it's a real fascinating piece.
Love
and I think
it.
People should go listen to it.
100%. I will link both of those. I mean, I'm going to go listen to those right now, but everybody else can listen to it when the episode comes out. Cause those are,
totally.
So that's amazing. Awesome. Thank you so much. Anton, you are just the best. Like I love you so fucking much. I love chatting with you. This has been such a nice time, and you know, I there's this part of me that like doubling back onto the novel for just a second, like, you know, I was inspired to write it because I, you know, partially inspired by you and partially inspired by that trip and our conversations and just awesome. You know, you're somebody who continues to inspire me, and I just deeply value you in my life. So thank you so much for just being you and doing your thing, you know.
That means a lot to me. I really appreciate that. And I can't wait till we get to hang out in person. And you know what? Woo! Who knows when that'll be, and that's okay.
And that's it. Thank you so much to Anton for coming back on the show. It was such a pleasure to catch up with him. The links to the shows that he mentioned are in the show notes. I have been listening to Bellwether and absolutely loving it. I cannot recommend it enough. It's actually going into this week's newsletter as well, so be sure to check those shows out. You're gonna love them. Speaking of the newsletter, why not sign up for my weekly Substack? You are going to get free access to a brand new poem, a brand new micro essay, a brand new playlist on Spotify, and so much more. It's been an absolute blast putting these out, and I think you're going to love them. Again, you can sign up for those in the show notes. One last thing before I go. I have started a new separate Instagram account for sharing my poetry writing. So you can follow me at Hey Sorry I Missed You on Instagram. I'm hoping to expand this to TikTok, maybe do some, you know, of those really fun videos with the music and the sad and the playing and getting the hits and the algorithm and all those things. But for now, it's on Instagram and it is a ton of fun. I've been sharing some of the key poems from my collection First Dates with Pro Wrestlers that I'm hoping to have published next year. So feel free to check those out. Again, links in the show notes. Follow me. It's a ton of fun. I've been getting some amazing feedback, amazing love, and I cannot thank you enough for it. But that is it for me this week. Nothing massive to report other than those. So I'm just going to wrap this up here. I got myself a little bit of a cold, so I'm going to give my voice a rest for the rest of the day. But hey, I'll be back next week with another brand new episode, and I hope to catch you there. But I'm not going to worry about that now, and neither should you, because that is then, and this is now. So for now, all I'm going to say is I love you so goddamn much, and I wish you well. Fun and safety, sweeties.